performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hey, welcome back to Mind Body Peak Performance, your source for life skills, strategies, and tools to help you build the ultimate high-performance lifestyle. The previous episode with Nate Palmer ended our mini-series on fitness. Now we're diving into the world of supplementation, and I've got some good stuff for you in store. We'll start out today with my personal favorite. That is the ancient world of herbal medicine. I like it because these compounds are safe and effective. Then next week, we will examine mushrooms with an overview of the medicinal mushroom landscape from someone who's been involved in it longer than just about anyone. Then the following week, we will examine the science of mushrooms, the active ingredients, and inactive. We've also got an episode on nootropics and a particular mineral that virtually everyone is deficient in coming after that. But today, Shannon Stone has the floor. Shannon is a clinical herbalist who was diagnosed with endometriosis at age 19. She lived in misery following her doctor's guidelines without any relief. At age 22, they told her that there was basically no hope, that she'd never have kids. She was also diagnosed with ADHD. Shannon began researching and used herbs, supplements, diet, and healthy lifestyle to completely turn her life around. Wouldn't you know, she got pregnant at age 27 and successfully treats her ADHD. She's living her best life and helping other women do the same via her business, Nomad Apothecary. Some of my highlights from this episode include how different preparation styles can determine the effects of the herb. Preparations go beyond liquid and powder. For example, there's essential oils, infusions, tinctures, extracts, syrups, creams, salves, balms, poultices. You get the point. Shannon breaks down the essentials that everyone should have in their kitchen or pantry. She shares a simple recipe for rapid wound healing and lasting immunity. We talk about adaptogens and herbs that support cognition, athleticism, and recovery. Just a quick housekeeping note before we get started. If you haven't already, please leave a rating and review at the same place you downloaded this episode. That's what helps us get found and how I get you thought-provoking guests. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation with clinical herbalist Shannon Stone. I've got Shannon Stone with me on the show today. Shannon is a master clinical herbalist and the owner of the Nomad Apothecary. Shannon, what have you done so far today? What unusual things for your health and performance?
Thank you for having me, first of all. And second, let's see, what unusual things did I do today? Well, I got up and I took my capsules that I made for myself to help with my ADHD and attention issues. And I did some meditating and I drew a rune to kind of see how the day was going to go and get myself in the right mindset. And then I packed up my entire house, which is my camper, and we moved to a completely different spot because it was too hot where we were and it's much cooler up here. So that was relatively unusual. It was kind of a last minute decision. So here we are.
Is that where you are right now?
Yes, that is. We're at the top of a mountain, about 10,500 feet above sea level right now, in Colorado, where the temperature dropped from 99 degrees down to about 75 with a nice breeze, so we can enjoy it.
Oh, lucky you.
Yes.
How long have you been living the nomad lifestyle?
2 years and a month.
And what sparked the change?
Well, my husband and I were really tired of the rat race and never seeing each other. It would take us several hours to get home from work every night. And by the time we got home, we were exhausted and we had to feed the kids and they had to go to bed right away. And so we didn't feel like we were spending any time with them. We were exhausted. So any time we got after the kids went to bed was like maybe 5 minutes before one of us was falling asleep. And we just got really tired of that life where we just never saw each other and felt like the only thing we were working for was to pay the bills and then go to sleep and go back to work the next day. So we decided we needed to do something drastic, and we didn't really know what that was, but we started looking into different lifestyles, maybe going to like a tiny house, something like that. And we both hopped on to YouTube and we found people that lived full time in their RV. And we were like, wow, didn't know that was a thing. So we started researching it and we fell absolutely in love with the idea. So we decided in February of 2019, we were going to do this. By the end of May, we had sold the house, closed on it, moved into our camper, and have been living in it ever since, traveling all over the country and just absolutely love it.
You guys were ahead of the whole work from home craze.
We were. We were so good. Actually, when COVID hit, we were in a much better position being in our RV than we would have been if we had still been in our house. So it was kind of a blessing in disguise, you know?
Yeah. So Shannon, what's your backstory? How did you get into herbalism in the first place?
Oh, good question. I was diagnosed with endometriosis at 19. That is a disease that affects those individuals with the uterus. And what happens is the endometrial tissue migrates to other parts of the body. And when you have your cycle and your period, it actually follows the same cues as the endometrial tissue inside your uterus. And so it can cause a lot of pain, it can cause severe bleeding, and it can cause a lot of issues with your cycle and your period and all that. And it got continuously worse until 22. At age 22, they told me that I would probably never have a biological child, that I would have to probably do IVF or something like that. And even that was probably not a guarantee, as bad as things had gotten. And it kind of was devastating to hear that, because if I decided to want to have kids, I wanted to be my decision, not something ripped away from me. And so that kind of set me on the path, because their answers for, well, what can we do about it, were like, well, not really much. Good luck, you know. And they didn't have a lot of solutions that I was comfortable with, or any solutions at all that were really long-term going to do anything. So that set me on a path of looking for something else. And I found a fertility massage therapist, which I didn't know was a thing until then, that I started doing. And I started seeing my chiropractor all the time. And I started trying all these different herbs and supplements that I had read would really help. And just really started trying that. And from like 22 to 25, kind of dabbled in and out, was more consistent with just the chiropractor mainly and the massage. And then around 25, it took a turn again. And I decided I had to really buckle down and get serious. So that's when I really started getting into like the herbs and really trying it. And 3 years later at 28, I managed to get pregnant 100% naturally with no IVF. And it was a complete shock to me and to everyone else, because my doctors were like, well, this can't be. And I was like, well, it is. So what do we do now? And yeah, ended up having my miracle baby that they told me I would never have. And I just knew from then on that I wanted to help other women who were in the same position as me to find that same path that I had, that would help them and would give them some ease off the pain and the different, you know, things that come with endometriosis. And then a couple of years ago, I got my ADHD diagnosis, and that set me on another path of, now that I was a herbalist and I'd done all the schooling and all that, that I kind of knew more about all that, finding treatment for that as well for myself. And so now I manage my own ADHD and I help clients do the same. So I specialize mainly in women's health and ADHD, though I do see male clients as well.
In your health journey, where did you turn to find this information?
Well, the internet wasn't really a thing back then, because I am that old. So yeah, I kind of started, first I went to like the massage therapist once I discovered, like a friend of mine told me that she had gone to this lady. And so I went there, and then she had a lot of suggestions on stuff that I could try. And then I went to my chiropractor and he had some suggestions on what I could try. And I had a friend who had just finished naturopath school. So I went and talked to them and they had some suggestions. So I kind of started there. And then I started doing, you know, research the old fashioned way, which was going to the library and finding any book I could on herbs and anything like that. And just really buckling down and reading all of it and, you know, taking copious amounts of notes and that kind of stuff. And so that was where I got the majority of like my education from. After I ended up having my daughter, then I ended up going to school. But prior to that, yeah, it was just the old school search through books kind of a thing, you know?
I forget the library exists sometimes with the convenience of YouTube, podcasts, online journals, one-click Kindle orders.
Right, right. It's hard to imagine life without it now that we have it.
Yeah. Prior to becoming an herbalist, you were a nurse, correct?
I was. I went to nursing school straight out of high school and started nursing at like the, how old was I? Ripe old age of like 22, maybe 23. And was doing that all up until last year, actually. I went back when COVID hit so I could help out in the hospitals and stuff and, you know, help with a lot of that. Now I'm officially retired again, but I was a nurse for 15 years, mainly did ortho at the beginning of my career and then did some rehab and trauma in the middle of my career. And the last 4.5 years of my career, I was a GI nurse and I loved it so much. And it was really my jam and totally my thing. And I became a certified GI nurse, which basically meant that I had a separate board certification for GI on top of my nursing license. So I just absolutely loved that part of it. But my business started really taking off. And so I decided that one thing had to go because I couldn't balance both of them. And honestly, I loved the herbalist side more than the nursing side after, you know, 15 years of that. So retired from there and have been full-time in here ever since. So
how did your colleagues and the nursing profession as a whole view herbalism?
There were kind of split down the middle. There was many that were like, oh yeah, this is totally what we need. And I can totally see where you're coming from. This is amazing. You know, how can you help me with this? What do I need for that? You know, and then there was others that were kind of on the other side of the scale where it was kind of like, oh, that's totally woo and you're crazy and I don't understand what you're doing. And you're probably just imagining all these effects. So it's a placebo, you know, and that's it. And then there was a few that were kind of in like that gray area in between who were like, well, I don't really think it's woo, but I don't really believe in it 100%, but I'll still ask you for advice and try it. And then when it works, be shocked. So there was, you know, that kind of, but for the most part, the majority of my colleagues were really accepting of it, understanding. And after most of us being in nursing for as long as we had been, seeing how the side effects of medications like actually affect people and seeing how the management of certain diseases and stuff was not very good. And there wasn't a lot out there and people were, you know, frequent flyers. We were seeing them constantly for things and, you know, it was just the same thing over and over again. And then, you know, here I was having some of the same issues as these clients, these patients, but then I wasn't in the hospital at the time and I was good and I was coming to work and they were like, okay, so what are you doing that we're not doing in medicine that is helping, you know? So it did kind of open up a lot of conversations sometimes and, you know, was able to really kind of do some education and that really helped. And the last hospital I worked at was actually pretty progressive and they used a lot of holistic treatments for patients to help them get better and to heal things. And so it was really nice where they actually, the doctors were willing to not only listen to me, but implement things that I suggested. So it was a nice collaboration.
Can doctors that prescribe herbs be held liable if they don't work as expected?
I believe it kind of falls under the same as like medications, you know, where you say, okay, well, you're going to try this one kind of a thing. And then, you know, if it doesn't work or it, you know, causes a side effect, then, you know, well, yes, wasn't what we intended and we tried it. So let's try something different. I believe it's kind of the same thing, especially if it's coming as like a prescription and not as a just go pick this up over the counter kind of a thing. And that's what they did. They did a lot of like prescriptions in the hospital and our pharmacy would actually compound it and stuff. So it was more of a prescription strength herb than, you know, an over the counter one.
Okay. What is it that you like about using herbs clinically?
I like seeing the transformation in my clients without all of the horrible side effects that I saw all the time as a nurse. So many people would, come in because they were having GI issues, and we would do this test and that test, and we tried this med and that med, and then because I started this med, then we had to start that med to keep up with the side effects of the first one, and then the second med, we'd have to have a third med added to stop the side effects of the second med, and before you knew it, the patients were on like four or five medications, and only the first one was for the actual problem. And it was just kind of like a cascade. And with herbal medicine, what I find to be true most of the time for the majority of my clients is less is more. There are so many that I issues that we can heal and help the body correct with using one herb, maybe two herbs, maybe a blend of three herbs tops, but there's minimal side effects, if any at all. Most of my clients don't have any side effects, and it's, amazing, and they start healing and they start feeling better. And so I just really like that there's a fairly quick transformation for most people where they start feeling right away, like better, and things are changing, and that ultimately we don't have to add a second herb on to help with the first herb side effects or a third herb on to help with the side effects of the second one. And so there's not a lot of they don't get that same kind of like discouragement and despair that you get when, they say, oh, we're going to start you on this pill and it's going to fix you. But then you have to be on pill number two and then pill number three and then pill number four. And there's a lot of discouragement of, I hear patients all the time, well, is this really helping? What am I doing? Why are we taking this? And I don't get that mainly at all with any of my clients. They take it, they start feeling better, and things start, changing pretty much right away with no side effects. And they're like, wow, this is great. So that's like my favorite thing probably is that it's so easy to, when you get the correct herbs, to see that transformation and not have to go through so many side effects and just unpleasant stuff to feel better at the end.
Are herbs more gentle on the body than synthetics?
I feel so. From my education in herbs, it's definitely what we were taught, and it's definitely my experience. There are, of course, what we call like the hard-hitting herbs, ones that are stronger and definitely you need way less of. And if you take, too much of it, can definitely cause the opposite problem of what you want or cause harm. So those are the ones that we usually don't tend to reach for first. I tend to reach for what we call more the gentle herbs, like chamomile, for example, is one that's very kind of gentle but very impacting and long-lasting effects and helps with so many different things in clients. So it tends to be something to reach for first. So definitely start with the gentle herbs and then, move up to the more harder hitting ones if we need to. But I find for the most part that the gentle ones do what we need and we don't ever need to move on to the stronger ones.
In a previous conversation, we discussed what you call root cause medicine. What is that, and how can my listeners use that in their own situation?
Yeah, definitely. Root cause medicine is a very holistic based way of approaching a problem that a patient has come to you with. Because what patients come to me with normally is like, hey, my periods are out of whack, and or I'm having really heavy periods, or my ADHD is getting really out of control during certain times in my cycle, and I just want my ADHD fixed, or I just want my periods to stop being heavy, or I just want, my periods to go back to normal, or whatever. They have this goal in mind, which is great, but they have just a very linear, one point, this is what's bothering me, and we're going to fix that. And what I do as like a root cause practitioner is I do a really in-depth consultation. We get way down into their history, surgical history, medical history, any medications they're on, anything you've done in the past, what exactly is happening in all their body systems, because all your body systems are connected. So while, yes, you're having a heavy period, it might not be caused from a dis, you know, an imbalance in your hormones. It could be caused by something going on in your GI tract, which is disrupting the flow of your now reproductive tract. So, what I do is in this in-depth consultation is really ask them a bunch of questions that to them probably are like, why are you asking this? I came to you for period trouble and you're asking me about what I eat. What does that have to do with anything? And we get really down into it, and between talking with them and using, you know, intuitive medicine as well, I just really discover what really is causing all of these problems. And we start the blends by treating those and then work our way out to the other body systems. And ultimately, it fixes the problem they came to me for, and even problems they didn't realize they were having. And so I really like that approach the best, because it treats the whole person. It treats what's actually causing it, so that when you fix that, then everything is fixed and you don't have to worry about, you know, those other things continuing on. And so I find really the best approach to medicine. Whereas the allopathic medicine model, which is what most modern medicine follows, is, very much symptom management. Like, you come in and you say, I'm having anxiety, and they say, oh, okay, here's a pill for anxiety, it'll make it go away. But they didn't actually take time to ask why the patient's having anxiety, or when did it start, or maybe it's just situational. Maybe they had a major life event that has caused some anxiety all of a sudden, you know, when they never had any before. Or they are having maybe an issue in their nervous system and it's causing anxiety. Symptoms are your body's way of trying to talk to us. And so if you can discover what they're saying by doing a really in-depth consultation with your client, then you can discover what's actually happening and fix the whole problem, and not just tame the anxiety for as long as they're taking the medication.
What happens physiologically if you suppress a symptom, if you cover it up with, say, a medication?
Stopping a symptom is great for like symptom relief, and the patient is like, oh good, it's away and I feel great, and they go on about their life. But what happens is, when you don't listen to what your body is saying, then your body starts decompensating. So whatever was causing that issue will continue to deteriorate and get worse because it's not been fixed. The root problem has not been addressed. So yeah, you no longer feel the anxiety or whatever your symptom was, but you haven't addressed the problem. So it will continue to degrade. And eventually, our bodies are amazing. They have amazing systems in place to keep us alive, to compensate for all kinds of crazy things happening inside. But eventually they hit what we call the decompensation phase, where it just cannot, you know, it's exhausted mentally, physically, emotionally, and your body just cannot anymore continue in that compensation without some assistance. And that's when you'll start noticing like the symptoms come back and they're worse, or now you got a new symptom, or suddenly you're, you know, passing out and hit your head and now you're in the hospital and they're evaluating you. And that's when they find that now you have cancer, or you have a perforated ulcer in your stomach. And, you know, like, so things have gotten a lot worse. And then you're on the wrong side of medicine care, where now we're trying to fix that when it's gotten so far gone that it takes a lot longer, it takes a lot more aggressive care, it takes maybe surgeries or long hospitalization. And, you know, so if you come in and you get it when they first come to you and you address it then, and you find the root cause and you help your body repair it, then, you know, that stuff will usually not be a part of the equation then.
I realized one day that my favorite approach to using allopathic medicine is to find where it supports the body's natural processes. For example, mm-hmm. if you break your arm, the cast doesn't heal the arm. Your body does, and the cast supports it. And I've seen mm-hmm. this field called bioregulatory medicine, and I like that approach of just supporting the body's natural systems versus yes. brute force opposing them. This comes up, bring it back down with whatever modality it is. Like, why is it up in the first place? What can I do to gently bring it down and let the body regulate itself?
Yes.
Back on to the topic of herbs, there are many different preparations, mm-hmm. such as liquids, dried, even essential oils and extracts of plant compounds. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between them, and do you have preferences when creating herbal concoctions?
Yes, there is a major difference between all of those. The essential oil of a plant is the most volatile, but also the strongest element of a plant that you're pulling out when you do that. As such, you only need teeny, 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 tiny amounts of that, like one drop mixed with a carrier oil and rubbed over wherever the symptom is can stop it, you know, almost immediately and provide like almost instant relief without more than that. You don't need more than like that one drop, you know. But that said, they're also very volatile and you don't know exactly what kind of dose you're getting in that one drop. And it's really hard to say, you know, what exactly it's going to, how it's going to work and how it's going to affect everybody. And they're definitely not something that you want to ever ingest due to the fact that because of their volatile compounds and their volatile nature and the fact that they are very caustic, they can literally burn a hole through your GI tract and then you will wind up in a very bad situation that you don't want to be in. So those are very much something that I use sparingly. I use them a lot for more aromatherapy purposes, like relieving of congestion when there's colds. Rosemary and eucalyptus are very good for that. Put it in like a steam bath, hot bath of water, lean over it and breathe it in. Very good at clearing things up. So those are the main ways I use those.
I was an essential oil skeptic, and then I read Cass Ingram's book, The Cure is in the Cupboard, about oil of oregano, and decided after reading through all the dozens of health benefits she claimed it had and then reviewing the studies myself that I'd try it. And so I ordered it off Amazon. It had high levels of the active ingredients and it arrived. I put one drop in my tongue and immediately burned my tongue and I will never ingest essential oils again. I'm no longer a skeptic.
Yeah, they definitely work, but they should not be ingested and they always need to be diluted in some form of oils before you use them on your skin. Period. And there's a lot that cannot be used on children because of their volatile nature. And there's a lot that shouldn't be used on, you know, animals at all or even be diffused around them. So it's just something if you're going to use, you need to do a lot of research first or consult someone like myself or a certified aromatherapist to, you know, use them safely and correctly so you don't wind up with issues. Other preparations, as you mentioned, liquids, those are usually infusions or decoctions and what we like to call teas. And those are usually the best way to prepare a herb and give it as a medicinal herb because water tends to be the best extractant for pulling out the constituents that you want to use and getting them into clients. They usually taste pretty good. You know, sometimes they taste like medicine. So there's that. But you can usually sweeten them up with a little bit of honey or something and get them, you know, more palatable. So, and then, it, you know, they're fun to drink. They're usually easy to make. They don't take a lot of effort. You know, so those are my favorite way probably to dose medicinal herbs with my clients. The other liquid type of herb is called a tincture or sometimes an extract. It depends on what strength you're making it. Like a one-to-one ratio of herb to the extractant is called an extract typically, and anything greater than that is considered a tincture. The difference between even those two is that an extract is much stronger and needs a much smaller dose than an actual tincture, depending on the herb that is in there. So those are my probably second favorite way to dose herbs is I literally have a whole cabinet just full of grain alcohol and water and different herbs and setting them up to turn into tinctures. So I just love doing that. It's so much fun to make them and they work really well. They're very good for my clients who maybe have a very busy life or a very stressful life. That makes it so that it's a little more difficult to like make a tea, you know, three times a day, which is the typical dosing regimen for, you know, that kind of stuff. So a tincture is easy. It's in a bottle. You can take it with you. You can, you know, dump out the little bit you need and toss it back and, you know, go on about your day. So I tend to lean toward those more for my clients that, you know, need a little bit more of a convenience. And then there is another liquid one that you don't see very often, but I use it quite frequently because I find it works very, very well. And it's called an Oxymel. It is a mix of apple cider vinegar and honey that are used to extract the constituents from whatever herb you put in them. My favorite one to make is a nettles Oxymel. Nettles are chock full of multiple vitamins and minerals and iron that your body needs and are best extracted in either water or vinegar. So I make that Oxymel a lot and give it to clients who are maybe needing to recover from a major surgery they just had or cancer. You know, they're recovered, you know, they've now been been considered in remission, but their bodies still need some assistance in getting over all of the side effects of the medications and stuff that they were on for that. And individuals who are maybe having really heavy periods and need some assistance with getting some more iron in them. Yeah, so I like that. I use those three, the infusions, tinctures, and the oxymils the most. There's also a few other ways. There's syrups, which I tend to make for any of my like 12 and under clients that I have, because it's really hard to get a kid to take a really nasty tasting tea three times a day. But they will take a super sweet syrup three times a day without complaining. So that's another liquid one, but it is very, very sweet, like very sweet. And so those are typically recommended for short-term use for children, mainly only just because of the sugar content. There's like herbal honeys as well that I can make. And a lot of times I'll do that if a client's having a really hard time with the tea. I'll make like a herbal honey that'll add an extra kick to it, but then sweeten things up and send that down to them. So those are the main like liquid ways to take them, you know, like orally. And then there's creams and balms and salves and poultices that you can do externally to help as well. I tend to make more creams than anything else because they last longer, they set up easier, and they're easier for clients to use. So that tends to be where I go the most when I make that kind of stuff. And then poultices are my second favorite way to do externally. My husband will attest to that. He always seems to be getting injured on his job that he does. And so I'm always constantly having to put a poultice on him when he comes home from work. So those are probably my two favorite ways, but that's the main rounded out preparations that a herbalist tends to reach for.
Can you extract virtually all active ingredients with either alcohol, honey, or apple cider vinegar?
Once you extract the most constituents, grain alcohol, so as a tincture, is the best way to go. Except for, like I said, the case of nettles, where vinegar is actually the best way to extract that one. But that's an exception to the rule. So typically the best way, if you're going to do where you want to get the maximum benefit and the most you possibly can, is like as a tincture form with grain alcohol.
That said, what are the most essential things for people to stock in their pantries at home?
This does not seem like a herb to most people, but it actually is. You should always have garlic on hand. Keep a clove or two at all times. I love garlic because it is a wonderful natural antibiotic, and it works really well in the respiratory system as well. So it is great if you feel a cold coming on, or you're starting to feel a little bit run down, like you're catching something. I chop up probably 4 or 5 cloves of garlic and throw it into about 1/4 to 1/2 cup of honey and mix it up and take 1 tablespoon of that every hour while awake. And within probably 24 hours, you will feel 1,000% better and will never have any issues. Usually you can kick whatever it is out as long as you caught it at an early enough time. And if you manage to not catch it early enough, you can take it every hour on the anyway, and it will definitely help your body recover quicker. So always, always, always keep lots of garlic on hand.
When I was living in Spain, I had bronchitis for a couple of weeks, and I thought it would just pass. I didn't know what it was at the time. And I had symptoms. I felt pretty bad. But every day I would just get a clove of raw garlic and I'd eat that before class. Surprisingly, when I went to the doctor, they told me that I had bronchitis, and they were blown away that I was able to avoid going in for so long. So it does something.
Yes, it definitely does. If you catch it, like I said, early enough, then you obviously have a greater chance of it just kicking it out altogether.
And does organic garlic have higher levels of the constituents or the active ingredients?
Honestly, I don't think there's really been any studies to really determine that. But obviously, organic is always the best way to go if you can afford it in your budget, for sure, because even if the constituents aren't any different, you're definitely not having anything that shouldn't be in there, like pesticides or any kind of genetic modifications. So I always tell my clients that, you know, organic is the way to go, but if you can't afford it, like, don't beat yourself up over it.
What's next after garlic?
After garlic, you always want to keep some rosemary. Again, people think of it as a spice, and it is, but it's also a very powerful herb used for many different things. Again, respiratory issues are one of the best things, and any kind of heart issues. It's really good at actually bringing high blood pressure down. If you drink it as a tea, it's really good for opening up the vascular system because it acts as a vasodilator. So it's really good to keep on hand. If you get a lot of migraines or headaches, take it at the first sign. Start, you know, make a really strong tea where you put about 3 or 4 teaspoons of rosemary in the cup to about probably like 2 cups of water, and then take about 1/4 cup every half an hour to an hour when you first feel the first twinge and kick that headache out of there. You can take that along with some thyme as well to help with the headache, and that will be fabulous. So always have that one on hand. It's also safe to be a steam bath or anything like that for children. So if they're all clogged up from a cold or anything respiratory related, having them inhale that steam is very safe and very, it helps decongest and it helps give them some relief so they can breathe easier and, you know, sleep better. So that's my second favorite one to keep on hand. This is one that you don't find just hanging out at stores, so you'd have to go online probably and get it. But my next favorite to keep on hand is yarrow flowers. Yarrow is a very good styptic herb, meaning that it stops bleeding and it stops it very quickly. In fact, and then starts the healing process. So you have to make sure that if you put it on a wound, which is what it's really good for, it's a very good wound herb, is to make sure that you have rinsed the wound out first with some water or some soap and water is the best practice to make sure that when you put the yarrow poultice on there or the yarrow cream or the yarrow infusion, however you're using it, that it won't start the healing process so fast that it heals bacteria and dirt in there and then you wind up with an infection.
Really?
So yes, my husband actually cut his toe open, I don't know, probably like 3 weeks ago. I don't even know how, he doesn't know how, but he came back in the house. He'd been running outside barefoot. This is probably how it actually happened. And sliced his toe open and he came in and it was blood everywhere because toes bleed a lot because the vascular system is really close to the surface down there. And so I, you know, rinsed out really well. I made a quick poultice. I took my yarrow flowers, crushed them a little bit, added a little bit of water to them, stuck it on top of there. And within probably 3 seconds, the bleeding was stopped. We went and I wrapped a cloth around it and tied it around his toe and made him keep that on there overnight. The next morning, I was having to pull the yarrow out from underneath the skin because the skin had started to grow over it overnight. Wow. Already. So it was, yes, it is very fast at helping your body heal itself. And he now completely healed over and doesn't have a scar or anything. And you would never know that he'd even like sliced a chunk of his toe out. So very, very good herb. You can also powder it up if you get really bad nosebleeds. I have horrible nosebleeds all the time, thanks to some bad vascular system in my nose. And you can make a powder of it and just kind of snort it and gets it to stop right away. You may look like you're doing drugs, but I promise you, it doesn't matter if you start feeling better. It's also good for fevers. So, and it is safe for children, nobody under 2, but 2 and up. It is very safe. I'd make a very dilute form of it, probably like 1/4 teaspoon to like 8 ounces of water for kids. And you can use it at that point as a poultice on their skin, anywhere in the heat points. So like the forehead, under the armpits, the groin, and it helps the body vasodilate and pull all of the blood to the surface and get rid of the heat. You can also drink it as well. And I would do again, like probably for kids, anywhere from like 1/4 to 1/2 cup every like 30 minutes to an hour. And that'll also help your body really deal with the fever, get you through this phases quicker and help your body, just support it during that time because fevers can be very hard on the body, but they're very necessary. So as long as it's not too high, fevers are safe and are actually good because that's your body's way of kicking out whatever is not supposed to be there. So that's my other favorite one to keep on hand because it is safe for children and it is great for so many different things. So let's say we had garlic, rosemary, yarrow, and I'm trying to, I know there's one more that I usually recommend, but my mind has gone blank currently.
Thyme.
Thyme is a really great one too. It works really well for like headaches. It works well for tension and stress and anxiety. And it's actually really good to just put in your food to use for that, you know, or also, you know, to take as a tea. Also, thyme is very, very good at helping your body heal mouth sores and ulcers. So I make a really good thyme and peppermint herbal mouthwash. And we use that in place of like Listerine. And the dentists are always commenting on how great our gums look. And they're like, what do you do? And we're like, my husband, of course, brags. He's like, my wife makes this really good mouthwash. And of course, they're glaring at me like I'm crazy. But, but that's my favorite way to use it is in a, I make it into a pretty strong infusion and then add, I don't know, about a quarter. So it's about 2 cups of water to about 2 teaspoons of thyme and 2 teaspoons of peppermint, boiling water, pour it over, let it sit until all the herbs basically sink to the bottom, and then give it about another 10 minutes after that. Strain it out, add a splash of alcohol to it. I use grain alcohol because that's what I have on hand for making tinctures. You could use vodka or anything else. You just want it to be, you know, like 70 proof. Throw a splash of that in there to kind of preserve it and keep it from going bad. And there you go. Got yourself a great mouthwash to use.
I do a practice called oil pulling, and it's mm-hmm. similar to what you just mentioned. And I use coconut oil as the base, and then I'll add in a drop of several different types of essential oils. And one of them is peppermint. Another is the Thieves essential oil blend. And it freshens up the mouth in kind of like Listerine or other mouthwashes. And I found that my gums are healthier now as a result too.
Yeah, definitely. Oil pulling is great. It really helps your body get the toxins that are in the bloodstream that haven't been filtered out by your kidneys or your liver yet, and help really get those pulled out and away from your body, because definitely not stuff you want to keep around.
I saw on your social media that you make something called fire cider. What is that?
I do, and I love it. It's a winter, old-fashioned, like folk winter remedy. Typically it would be made around like September, October, when the peppers and onions and garlic really started coming into like their time of, you know, harvest. And it's a mix of apple cider vinegar and a little bit of grain alcohol and hot peppers. I use jalapenos, but you could use any kind of hot pepper. And I use about 3 jalapenos and about 2 onions and probably about like a whole cluster of garlic, like a whole bud of garlic chopped up. And you kind of throw that all together into usually a quart size basin jar is what I use. And then officially, if you're going to make it the true folk way, you would mix that all up, shake it up, and you would go bury it in the ground outside. And then come like November, December time, you would unbury it and it would be ready. And you would take a teaspoon to a tablespoon, depending on your age and size, every day during the winter. And it would help, you know, basically keep off flus and colds from, you know, happening and other respiratory illnesses. Or if you had an illness that you'd already come down with, you could take extra and it would help your body kick it out. It's called fire cider because it burns like crap going down. So highly recommend, if you're not one who can handle that, that you toss a tablespoon of it into like a cup of water or juice or coffee or a smoothie or whatever works and take it that way. But yes, it's a fabulous remedy. My family hates me every winter, but you know what? We don't get sick. So, you know, there's that.
I'll have to give that recipe a shot this upcoming winter.
Yeah, it's very good. It's actually pretty tasty, but yeah, it definitely burns going down. So just be prepared.
What about specific herbs for mental performance, for cognition? Are there any that you like for that?
This will sound funny, but thyme is actually really good for cognition. It's a really good herb for calming your brain and allowing it to work at a better function and level. I use it a lot in my ADHD blends because of that, but it works for other things besides ADHD. It works even if you don't have ADHD. So it does. It works very well for helping your memory and your focus and just your cognitive levels. So that one is one that I like for that. And ginseng is really good for that, but ginseng is an adaptogen. And so it's not something that you want to take all the time. It's something that if you know you're going into like a high stress situation where you're going to need all of your brain capacity working at its best, then you would take it like the night before and then like the morning of and maybe the day after to help your body recover. But it's not something you're going to take all the time. It's very strong and it's one of those hard hitting herbs. So less is more, and it definitely shouldn't be taken all the time. But it is very good for acute stressful situations like that where you do need your brain to be at its best.
That's good to know. I take every morning I make a nootropic cocktail that includes a bunch of different adaptogenic herbs, and some of them include Brahmi, ashwagandha, rhodiola, a lot of the classic adaptogens, and I generally take it 5 days in a row, like during the weekdays, and then take the two off, and then every couple of months, maybe every 2 months, I'll do a month off. But it sounds like from what you're saying that it's not a good approach to take it that frequently.
Adaptogens are great for different disorders for sure in different times of your life. But yeah, they are very strong, they're very powerful, and they're not things that usually you should take all the time. What I usually recommend for patients who do need them, you know, for whatever reason they're taking them for, is like 1 week on, 1 week off. If you're going to take them all the time. Otherwise, kind of your approach, you're taking for like a month and then take like a month off or 2 months off is also a good way of doing it. They are really great. Don't get me wrong. I love adaptogens, but they have a time and a place, and they're just definitely not, you know, all the time herbs.
Anything else for memory, focus, attention, motivation, overall mental health and performance?
Another one for attention, and would actually be really good too for, it also can help with Parkinson's symptoms, and it can even help with keeping Alzheimer's, you know, if it's going to happen to you, keep it, you know, from happening sooner, you know, keep it, you know, going, happening at a later time. Is something that is called, the common name is called the velvet bean. It's usually found in a powder form. It's really, really rare to find it in the bean form. But it has the ability to help boost dopamine production in your body. And dopamine is needed for so many cognitive things like attention and energy and focus and memory and keeping depression away and decreasing anxiety. So it's a really good thing. I use it myself and a lot of my clients, I give it to them as well. I tend to make mine in the capsule form because I tried it in the way you're normally supposed to take it, which is mixing it into water. And God, that was terrible. And I could not handle it. And everybody has a different palate. So, you know, it's quite possible someone else would drink it and think she was crazy. This tastes great. So, hey, if that's you, you go right ahead and do that. I make mine into capsules and take it that way. And it works just as well. I take that for my ADHD and I take two capsules in the morning, which comes out to about like a gram and a half of the powder. And then if I need it, if I feel like I need it later in the day too, because my energy is lagging and I still have stuff I need to get done, then I go ahead and take two more. But it really helps with my energy levels. It helps with my ADHD symptoms. I've noticed it works really well in my clients as well. So that's one of my other favorite ones to use. And hops, the ones that you make beer with, are actually a very good herb, and they are a little sedating. So it's something that if you're going to try, I recommend always starting in like the evening when you are getting ready to go to bed in a few hours, just because if you are the person who reacts in the more sedating way with them, you're not going to want to like be taking them and then trying to drive to work because you may fall asleep at the wheel and that would be very hazardous. So I always recommend starting at night and seeing how your body reacts before you ever start taking them in the morning as well. But you still get the benefits in the morning, even if you take it at night before you go to bed. But they really help your brain focus and kind of, you know, get that attention that you need to, you know, focus on whatever. So I like those as well. They are very calming to the brain. So if you tend to have like a hyperactive brain that's constantly running with ideas or keeping you up at night, it's very good to take those at night. Then that reason it calms your brain down so you can get some rest, and then gives you the good brain function in the morning, where your attention is where it needs to be and your focus is good. They're very bitter though. If anybody's drank beer, you kind of know that, because beer kind of has that bitter hop taste to it sometimes. So it's definitely something I recommend as an infusion because it works best that way. So as a tea, but definitely going to need to add some honey or something to it, unless you like the bitter taste, then, you know.
Do you ever work with folks interested in increasing their physical, athletic, or sports performance?
A few. I have a few clients that have ADHD, but are also like involved in like either physical jobs or physical activities like that, where they notice that their performance is starting to lag from their, you know, either their hyperactivity of their brain or their body or their inability to focus well. And so I do have a few.
Do they use any specific herbs?
Actually, the way that I go about it is help increase their focus and their ability to have more energy so then they can put their energy and their effort and their focus into their training to get to the point that they want. So again, a blend usually involves like some rosemary, some thyme, some hops, and probably like some skullcap or valerian, depending on how their body reacts. Some people do better with valerian, some people do better with skullcap. And then some people don't do good with either one of those, and that's when I reach for lemon balm and instead. But I find a blend with those. And of course, there's a certain way of formulating that where they stack on top of each other and which one should have, you know, how much of this and whatever. So I, you know, I formulate it based on what their needs are. And I've noticed pretty good results with, you know, that kind of a blend typically, then recovery wise, like after they've done whatever, helping with that as well. I find taking an infusion of red raspberry leaf and nettles afterwards is very good recovery for your body. It gives you lots of essential B vitamins. It gives you vitamin C. It gives you iron, and it gives you a bunch of like minerals that your body needs to really recover after efforts like that, and helps your muscles. If you're not into drinking a tea and you want something else, you can eat a honeydew melon that has all the same stuff in it, and it's probably a little bit more tasty if your honeydew melon is your thing.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, so that works great. That's what I do for myself when I work out. We usually tend to do that. And also a magnesium supplement. Magnesium glycinate is the one that I like the most. Take it before bed. It helps with sleep. It helps with calming. It helps with muscle spasms. It helps with your heart to keep it contracting properly. So it's just an all-around good supplement to take anyway. People with ADHD tend to have low levels of magnesium naturally. So taking magnesium can definitely help with that and the issues that come with it. Low levels of magnesium can lead to heart palpitations, constipation, muscle cramps, decreased focus and attention. So making sure that you take, you know, anywhere from 500 to 1,000 milligrams of magnesium glycinate every night before bed can really help with a lot of that stuff too.
Magnesium is one of my favorite supplements, and I take it in the morning as magnesium malate, and then also in the evening as magnesium glycinate.
Yep. I love magnesium. I use it for everything.
So we're running low on time, but if folks want to connect with you, how do they go about finding you?
Yes, they can email me at thenomadapothecary@gmail.com and just let me know that they heard about me on here and we can get chatting that way. They can hit me up on IG, Instagram, which is @healthbynomads. I have a lot of wonderful, free, valuable information on there as well regarding herbs, how to prepare them, what they're best for, you know, all that stuff, specifically towards women mainly, like I said, because that's my specialty, but men can definitely alter it to, you know, what they need as well. So I have all of that on there. I do a lot of lives on there and a lot of videos as well. And you'll see me acting like really stupid and real. So, you know, if you really want to see that, come join my Instagram page. And I do have a website as well where they can read more and just go right ahead from there and, you know, set up an appointment if that's what they're interested in. And that is thenomadapothecary.weebly.com.
All these will be in the show notes. And Shannon, what are your specialties?
I specialize in women's health and ADHD for the most part.
Great. Now, one more question before we go on to the rapid fire round.
Perfect.
Imagine that all of the information on Earth is gone. You get to save a total of 3 most meaningful works. They can be books, podcasts, YouTubes, interviews, you name it. What would you choose?
I would choose for a podcast called The Plant Path. It is by a herbalist who is based in Taos, New Mexico. His name is Sanji. He is amazing. I absolutely love his works, his stuff. He runs his own school. I just highly recommend looking him up. And it's called The Plant Path, but his school is called the Evolutionary School of Herbalism. And it's just amazing. I love him. So definitely that. Any book by Rosemary Gladstar, I would literally, you know, probably give my life to protect those. She is totally one of my favorite herbalists and honestly a mentor in a lot of ways. She was pioneering in women's health and herbalism like way back 50, 60 years ago when it wasn't really a thing back then. It had kind of fallen to the wayside, and she was kind of one of the responsible ones for revitalizing that and, you know, finding a lot of the herbs that work best and doing the research and stuff. So love her works. I use her for a lot of stuff. And then Matthew Wood, any of his books that he writes would probably be my next ones that I would save, because he is also a very good herbalist that has a slightly different approach to things than the other two. So it just makes it a very well-rounded, you know, approach to herbalism if you get those 3 individuals.
I'm excited to check those out.
I highly recommend that podcast. I love it. I totally bring pen and notebook though, because you're going to want and need to take notes, because it is just value packed with so much information.
Just the way I like it. Shannon, what's the best advice you've ever received?
Best advice I've ever received would probably be memories over mementos, meaning that life is way better when you make memories and connections with people and you set out on adventures than it is to buy meaningless crap that you don't need and is not going with you when you leave this earth. But memories will stay forever in the hearts of the people left behind.
What's the number one thing that you believe that virtually nobody else does?
I am not only a practicing herbalist, but I am also a practicing green witch. And so I use a lot of like the elements and the planets and a lot of astrology and how they line up with the herbs and line up with people and treating people and helping with their stuff. So a lot of people probably think I'm crazy and look at me like I'm insane, but I have the client testimonials to back up that it works. So I do believe a lot in that, you know, astrology and how it manifests in people and which herbs line up with which astrological signs and work best in individuals with those signs. So that's kind of one of my many people would consider woo things that I do in my herbalist practice, but you know, it works. So,
Shannon, how would you like to conclude our journey together today?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you for having me on. I have much enjoyed it, and I really hope that your listeners have as well. I always love passing on the stuff that I know and helping others start on their path to holistic healing and wellness. But also, life is short. It should be fun. If you are really sick and tired of the stress that you're under, and you're really sick and tired of the life that you have where it just basically eat, sleep, work, and you don't see your families, and you're not happy with that anymore, then you're responsible for your future. You set your future, and it is the best thing to do is to change that course, make one decision that will change the course of your life forever and make it into the life that you want. I took that step. It was scary as hell. I will tell you all that. But I took that leap, and it has seriously been one of the best things that I have ever done. I changed the course of my life forever in the best way possible. And we want everyone else to do the same thing. Don't be afraid to take that leap of faith because it always works out.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Shannon. It's been a pleasure getting to know you and having you on the podcast today.
Yes, thank you. You too. I've really enjoyed it.
All right. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.